Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things, we don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also, our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves as we are women. We are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. We are having some great times here on Health Blast 2015. And what does that mean? Well, you know, it's about having a new radio guest every single day. You just never know what you'll find or what you'll hear going on these shows. But we encourage you to just check out the links on Facebook and on Twitter. And you'll find so many different shows that will be talking about everything from cannabis to end of life to grief to, you know, what I should be eating or not eating. You just never know what will be on there. So please do check it out. And thank you so much for joining us live on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and we will also be coming to YouTube, hopefully by the end of January, but definitely by the end of February. So please do check it out. Today, my guest is Tiffany Papageorge. Her book is The My Yellow Balloon. Okay, now everybody knows we don't do children's books here, but we're all people, we're all humans, and we have kids. We either have kids of our own or we have grandkids, and I thought this was a wonderful addition to be able to speak on the show. You know, every time something happens, where do your kids go? Mom, can you come get the kids? You know, can somebody take the kids, you know, and so that parents can deal with their situations they have going on in their house, whatever that might be. And a lot of times, grandparents or the parents might not even know how to speak to kids about loss or grief or changes in life or whatever that might be. So this is a wonderful book. So today, Tiffany is going to be sharing a lot of her information about how this book got started and how she's found it to be received. So Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It is my pleasure to be with you.
What made you write this book? You know, a children's book, first of all, you know, and about lifting children's spirits. We see so many books these days, you know. Some of them the kids don't even read anymore, or the parents read to them, and by the age of three, we don't even see books anymore, right?
Yeah, isn't it a different place? Well, I am a book lover, and my kids are avid readers of books, I refuse to let it die. I think it's amazing. There's nothing like cuddling up with your child, no matter what age they are, and reading with them or having them read to you. I always say to people, it's like the extension of nursing. It just continues that bond, you know, all through their lives. You know, I really do think that there is something magically powerful about reading as a family and reading together. And I do believe that stories are healing, and I think it is. We are story beings, you know. We live in story. You know, from walking from the hallway to the laundry room, there's a story. we tell our stories. We go to lunch or coffee and we tell our stories to one another. And there's something in the exchange of our story that kind of puts us to the next story. And we dream in story. And so stories are remarkably powerful. Metaphors and parables are remarkably powerful tools to reach our own psyche and our children's psyche.
And, you know, and I think it's sometimes we look at books, you know, even myself today, I just caught myself canceling my New York Times subscription because it was on the internet and stuff. And I'm like, I'm starting a new leaf this year. It's going to be, you know, scratch all this texting and stuff and stop reading so much on the internet and, like, send me a book, send me a piece of paper, send me a card, or pick up the phone and call me, you know, because I think we have so lost that human connection, and that's so vitally important. And yet we try to sidestep it by, you know, doing all of these other electronic things, and we think, oh, hey, that'll just take care of it. I can just step out of it. But really what happens is we end up holding on to grief or pain, and we don't talk through it, or we don't feel it, or we don't experience it in all of its darkness and light, as I call it. And we just end up carrying it with us for so many decades. And, I mean, even your book, I'm sure it can touch every decade, don't you think?
I definitely think so. And I feel bad I didn't answer your question of how it started. And
okay,
I got off on my tangent, so I'm sorry.
That's
but
all right.
The book originally was assigned to me as a ninth grade English project by a very courageous teacher who did a death and dying unit. And for kids that had never ever experienced loss or death, it was a introduction of sorts to the topic and to getting us to think about it. And then for kids like me, who was I was a grieving kid. I'd been through a lot by the time I was 14. A lot of death and a big fat divorce and a lot of loss. For me, it was like a art therapy project, but I didn't really know that at the time. It just was like something that I could actually put expression into that I hadn't been able to before. And I didn't have grief centers like they have now, which are just such a valuable tool. But anyway, so she said, you know, she gave us this whole list of final assignments. And, you know, one was go to the cemetery and do like the epitaph sketching, you know, with a piece of chalk and a paper. And there were so many of them. I think it was around 50 or something. And I thought, you know, I'd been through many, many funerals, and I just couldn't imagine being in a cemetery that long. One was write an interview that you give to a dying person. And at the time, I was 14, I thought, oh, my God, what do you say? Now I would love that assignment because you could literally interview anybody because we're all going to die. And but I didn't really get the nuance of that at the time. And there were many of them. I can't remember all of them. But the last one was write a children's book explaining death to them. And that's the one that resonated with me. And I did that. Mm-hmm. And I was the only one in the class to do that. So that's where it originally started. And I was playing on the floor of my little brother, my mom's later in life baby from a second marriage, who's just my joy, my first baby of sorts. I was playing on the floor in his bedroom with him, not even thinking about my assignment, and the entire beginning came to me like a mind movie, I call it, because it was like a daydream but on steroids, and I saw the entire beginning of the book, and it came to me then. And then I couldn't find the ending, but I just wrote something for the assignment. And then I turned it in, and my teacher loved it so much. She worked for 2 years to publish it, but didn't get anywhere. But because of her belief in me and the story, it propelled me further into my life, knowing that I had to do something with this book. And so I carried it with me my whole life to grad school and when I was doing theater in London, and carried it with me everywhere, and knew someday I would work on it. And then the day came, and that's a whole other part of the story, is how the ending came.
And I think that it's just so important to be able to have open conversations, like I said, because you really need to experience everything. You can't just keep going electronically and saying that's okay and I'll store it away for a later time, or it really never fazed me. And these things really do have imprints upon us, you know, and it'll show up sometimes, somehow, some way in another, you know, decade of your life.
Absolutely. And I think we live in a culture, don't you, that doesn't really want to feel.
Right.
And it's really unfortunate because, you know, as a child, I'm Greek, of Greek origin. And one thing the Greeks really know is how to mourn. And
right.
to a degree where it was really terrifying as a child. I would have done anything for this book as a child to just know that I was going to be okay. Because when the grown-ups leave the room and they're in deep grief and they're wailing or they're, you know, sobbing, and, you know, as a child, it's a very terrifying feeling. But, you know, they feel. And I think that as I have grown up and I've, you know, really experienced other people, it's interesting how that's such a frightening thing for so many. And yet, like, if you look at the cover of my book, and you can't see this on the ebook, it's another reason to get the physical thing in your hands, is that the whole cover is radiant. It almost glows, and it has a dimensional quality to it. It's almost like a 3D kind of cover, and it was very hard to make it that way. We went through a lot of prototypes to get it just right. And the reason for that is that I wanted to symbolize that if we feel and not soothe, if we feel and we allow our children to feel, that we will become more dimensional as human beings. That really is kind of the unknown gift with purchase. You become more compassionate, you become more whole, you become richer and deeper. And that's what happens when we feel all the life experiences that are given to us.
You know, I live here in New Orleans, and all of the graves are above ground. And I always have done this for so many years now. On November 2nd, when it was All Souls Day, I would always, you know, walk around in the cemetery. I would pick one that I hadn't been before, and I would just, you know, meander through and see important things that I might want to note for my memory, and then my day was done. Well, this year, I had gone to a really large cemetery, and we celebrate differently here in the South. And, you know, the little driveways that you have between all of the above-ground graves, you know, so people could drive through. Well, here, they set up and people would gather in front of a certain tomb, and they would have a party. They would bring all of their chairs with their ice chests, their wagons. All of the people would come, and they'd be all dressed in maybe, you know, a certain celebration color, whatever. This year, the group, they all had hats, and they all had their chairs, their lawn chairs, and they had wagons for the kids, and they had their ice chests, and they were all dressed in red. And they were all sitting out there, and they were out there for the whole day. They were just enjoying being with and celebrating, you know, life as it is and life as it passes. And that was so important to them. You know, they felt connected. They were all together as a family. And, you know, that's how they do it here. You know, jazz funerals are, you know, a parade down the street and everybody's singing and dancing. And, you know, it's so different in so many different cultures, yet it's so different, you know, depending where you are on that spectrum also and how you're ready to deal with things.
Yeah, it's very personal. But there is something really powerful about connecting as a community through our loss and feeling the support of others. It's really vital, I think, to have that around us as we lose something dear to us or someone dear to us.
But also, you know, when they think about it, as you know, you have to go through it. But when you're on the other side of it, you're able to do these other things like go there and have a party, bring everybody together, you know, have lightness of it. Because as you said in the beginning, you know, we all have to go through this. There is no way escaping it. That is the human experience. Mm-hmm. So just being able to say, I can get through it and I know I'm okay on the other side is the greatest gift. And really that's what your book is about. You know, the sun does come up again. you know, color does come back into your life. Energy and feeling and being able to say, it's okay, it's another day, it's a great day, that day will come again.
Yeah.
So teaching those children that same concept is by, you know, seeing parents are able to do it. So that's so important too.
Yeah, it is so true. Because they're gonna feel feelings, and they're gonna feel, you know, children are called the forgotten grievers because a lot of times parents and grandparents think that they don't understand or they don't hear, you know, they're not listening in, or you know, or children grieve really differently. Sometimes they don't feel their pain all the time. They can just start playing spontaneously, and it leads the grown-ups to think, oh, they don't really know what's going on. But they just grieve really differently. So they are called that, and it's really amazing how, you know, one in five children will experience the death of someone close to them by the time they're 18.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot, you know?
Right, right.
It is definitely something that they're going to experience, and that's the death of a loved one close to them. That's not divorce. That's not moving away or having a friend move away. That's not having a parent being deployed,
mm-hmm.
you know, or God forbid incarcerated, or, you know, there's so many different losses that,
right.
you know, one little girl asked me if she could share her loss with me, and her loss as she was, it just chokes me up every time I think about it, but she had lost her breakfast and her dinners.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother had lost her job, and the only time she got to eat was at school.
Right.
And she was crying to me saying how hungry she was. So that was her loss. And so kids experience all kinds of losses, and as we do, as we all do.
Right.
Yeah,
and you know, even your parents could be alive, but they could be emotionally or just not even present, you
yeah.
know. And you look at it and you say, you know, I really lost my mother or my father when this, and this happened. You know, they were never ever present again. So
yeah.
you can still be there physically, but emotionally, or you know, just not even, you're just totally vacant. You know, so there's a lot of different levels in which we can say that someone would experience loss or something going on in their life.
Absolutely. And if we talk about it, or if we share our feelings, you know, it's as important to, you know, it's important to share with the people that we love and trust around us, because that does really help. And I think sometimes our instinct is to just go within and not share it.
Right.
But to be able to have the support of somebody is really amazing, and it's really also amazing to be the other person that somebody's leaning on. The exchange, both people get something out of that that is really bonding and really loving, and I think it's the greatest gift we have is to share our love and compassion with one another, and our presence,
Absolutely.
As you said, our presence.
Can you share a little bit about the story?
Yeah. So the story takes place in 1930. And the reason that is important is because before that, balloons were on sticks. And so there was a man that went across America, and he introduced in the late 20s and early 30s the very first helium floating balloons. And so that would have been, I mean, imagine seeing floating balloons for the first time. It would have just been incredibly magical. And originally it took place in a shoe store, but I really, this came to me a couple of years ago that it had to be somewhere where you couldn't get another balloon at a shoe store or a bookstore or a toy store or something. So it starts there, and when it starts out, there's this little boy named Joey, and he goes to the carnival with his parents, and he sees this man with these balloons, and he's just in awe, And the whole book is a metaphor. So you really need it, you know, because it's whatever you want to project onto the yellow balloon, whatever your yellow balloon is. And he goes up to this man, and he doesn't know which balloon he wants, but the balloon man knows. And he hands him this bright yellow balloon and says, "Here, let me tie you two together." From that moment on, they were never apart. And, you know, the balloon man's metaphorical for fate or destiny or the universe or God or whatever you want to say, whatever it is that ties us together when we don't even know who we want, who puts that beautiful wet baby on your belly that you've carried for 9 months and you don't know who they are, but the balloon man knows and knows who you need. And that is really symbolic of that. And so he plays with this balloon and he loves this balloon so much. And then one day the balloon gets away. And the book itself is quite an experience when you read it for many reasons. I really wanted to be able to tell the story to children in a way that was very visceral. So when the balloon gets away, the book completely shifts perspective. It completely shifts in orientation. Mm-hmm. Because when loss occurs, you know, it is disorienting.
Right.
And then the book unfolds because loss unfolds and you get the news or you get the word or you hear what's happening. And after the loss occurs, we've gone at the beginning from an innocent color, and then it goes into just draining of color when the loss occurs. And that was my attempt to, when I was 4 years old, I was in the room where some adults looked at me and said, "Oh, she's so depressed." And that really put me in a box for most of my life. When I would feel sad about something, it was, you know, "Oh, I'm prone to depression. I have been my whole life," or whatever. And I really didn't want kids to be put in a box. And how can you tell them, yes, things look different right now, but they're going to look different again, and you're going to be okay. And so I really wanted to be able to demonstrate the feelings of depression or sadness in a way that was really relatable, and also where they could really see the process and see that it was going to get better. And then when he grieves, the color slowly, slowly, slowly comes back until you get to the end where he has his epiphany and his catharsis. And at that point, there is, you know, full-on color. But as I told Erwin when we did it, I said, "You got to know this has got to have, you know, depth and shadow and light and, you know, because we see things with color again, but we never see things the same again, because we can't. Nothing's ever the same again. But we've deepened and we've become more fully ourselves through the process. And so what we lack in the sweet innocence, we make up for in the depths and the range of who we are."
And sometimes when you look at those concepts, some people don't even understand that for themselves, let alone be able to help someone else, like a child or any other adult that's even around you, don't you think?
I agree. I agree. And it's really, I think when, as I go across the country and I'm presenting my book, you know, I realize that, you know, maybe a part of its mission is to help people recognize that it's okay and give them the permission to feel.
Yeah, and so many people don't want to feel. They just keep that, like, put in that little closet of darkness, as we call it. And that's what they choose to do. And it seems like it can be contained. It can be, you know, away from you. It could be dark. It could be just something that you don't have to look at all the time. You know, we put things in a closet. We don't ever look back on them.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's, you know, where we seem to put things, I think, these days.
Yeah, I think that's, I think because it's really scary. It's scary to feel that kind of powerful, dark sadness or, you know, an emotion that isn't pleasant. And so what do? We, you know, we soothe it away. We busy ourselves. We go somewhere else. But it, you know, it is there. It's not going to go away. It it just isn't. And, you know, there was a, it's actually very freeing to be able to feel it and let it pass through you. It is something not to be afraid of. It is something to be, you know, it will feel so much better if you can allow yourself and not be afraid of it. Just allow yourself to feel. There's a quote in the beginning of my book, and I love it, and it's why I put it there. I went to the play, and I saw this play called Peter and the Star Catcher. It's a great play about the beginning of Peter Pan, you know, before anything, you know, before Wendy. And there's this line in it, and it says, "No, it's supposed to hurt. That's how you know it meant something." And I think that's really true. You know, things that mean something to us, it is going to hurt. And love, and, you know, you can't have loss without love. You can't. It's a two-sided coin. And, you know, if you don't love something, if you lose it, it doesn't matter to you. But I think that there's something really powerful about letting it be what it is for you, whatever that is. And
I think we can also have hurt and we can also have pain, but the suffering is the issue. So many clients will come to me in their later decades of life and they'll say, you know, I haven't felt well since. And they generally have a certain event that had occurred in their life, and that's where we have to go back and start at healing them, because that which they chose not to look at in their life is exactly what was holding them back and making them ill all along in their life. So things really do, you know, if you take it and wall it off like we said in the closet, you know, in the darkness, believe me, it's going to find a home in your body just as well. It could be in your knee, it could be in your hip, in your back, in your head, in your heart, in your lungs. It doesn't matter. It will find its own way to wallow itself up, and eventually that ends up as, you know, a really good chronic health disease when you're later in life. So really looking at things and allowing them to transform from grief, you know, and pain and suffering, and allow it to transform, as you said, into love is really the key. Because once it's transformed, then it no longer has those boundaries and those that darkness to it. You have to give it light. And that's really where you go. You give it light.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And it does. It does manifest physically. I've seen it myself. You know, yeah. It's amazing. And you know, there are people that, you know, are there to talk to and are there to help you. Right. You know, you do have support. You do have support.
And what type of clients have you found that were there? The people that purchased your book. How, you know, how was it received?
Well, it's been so humbling is the word. I have found it from the very first boxes that we opened. You know, I wrote a children's book, and that's what I thought I had. And so when the very first book was picked up and looked at, and I was there with them, this woman who happened to be a grief worker just like burst into tears, and and I was just in shock. I was like, wow, you know, and she just grabbed me and sobbed in my shoulder and told me all about her loss. That has been pretty, that has happened over and over again. You know, from the, you know, 50-year-old man who, said, you know, started crying and said, "My yellow balloon is my music. Since my stroke, I can no longer play my music," to the little girl who I mentioned earlier, to the woman who sobbed so hard I thought her whole family must have, something terrible must have happened, and it ended up being empty nest syndrome. To, you know, it's just amazing. I think it really allows people to feel. To the man who cried because his oldest son has a Oxycontin addiction, and he and his wife have just completely shut down to their friends because they don't want their friends to know anything. And so they're isolated and alone, and they're dealing with something very, very scary, and they don't have the support because they've shut it off. And, you know, he said, you're right. We need to feel and we need to share. And he ended up getting 20 books to share with his friends to begin to open up the conversation of what he and his wife are going through. So it has been a really profound experience for me to see it as it's been, you know, picked up by adults and kids and those youngest kids, the kids that you just know maybe haven't ever experienced anything. The 1.5-year-old kids that love the book. And I thought about that. I thought, wow, how is that? What are they getting out of it? Because I'm getting a lot of emails from parents with really young kids saying they just don't want to put this book down. And I thought about it, you know, and maybe Dr. Jeanette, you can shed light on this because I'm not a psychologist or you know, I'm a mom mm-hmm. and I've got a PhD in grief and I'm a storyteller. But it hit me that, you know, we're a part of our mother's womb for 9 months. It's the only home we know. And we leave it and we never get to mourn it. We don't remember it. We don't process it. We're just too busy breathing and eating and kind of going forward. But it is the only home we know for 9 months. And it is warm and it is comfortable and it is a happy place. And so I thought often, like, maybe the youngest of us even knows we're born into loss. We, you know, that's the whole process of life is things change and we move on, and that part of our life is never, you know, that chapter closes and that chapter closes, and, you know, we age or we lose our youth or whatever that is that we lose along the way. And mm-hmm. and maybe the youngest of children understand loss because even though it's subconscious, right. It's there.
But also, too, we think about, you know, you say about pregnancy and stuff, about the feeling that's a home, too. That's a home where you're birthed into the world, and we've spoken many times about this on the show, where you're birthed into this world, and really when it's time to leave this world, you really, we always feel it as a loss, but we really should look at it possibly as you're just being birthed into another world, you know. In other words,
yeah.
There is life after that. Your soul and your spirit and your energy still have a place in the world. And it's just that it's transformed into something different than we might see at this point.
I believe that.
And so many people, you know, feel that, oh, it's the end, or I'm just going to go to, like, croak and that's it. And it's like, please don't think that. You know, just think that there are possibilities in this world, you know. We always say, you know, when children are born, oh, they have the eyes of their grandmother or the spirit of their father or whatever that might be. Because energy is still existing in the world and it just transforms. So just like in the story, you're transforming grief into love. You need to say that, you know, we, through loss, will also transform. So our bodies may be gone, but our spirit and energy are still here, and that's how you talk to it, you know, and you're still present with it. How many times could you maybe recall over a period of a year and say, my gosh, you know, I smell something and that reminds me of so-and-so, or, oh, look at that, don't you remember that? Or, I remember seeing this before, tasting this before, or whatever it might be. And it could relate to someone that's maybe not here with you, or maybe in another time, or maybe another decade. So we're always transversing time and space. We just need to remember that.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree. And, yeah, there is something very, there's something very real, you know. It's yeah, with anything, it's interesting. It's like, you know, we will one day leave this world that we love, and
right.
And you know, we'll go on to the next. It is a cycle. It always, you know, it seems like those cycles, that life death life cycle, comes up over and over and over again. In our existence, there's something there that is, it's very natural. It happens in the seasons, you know. It's there every year for us, the spring, the summer, the fall, and then the winter. And then it dies, and then it comes back around. It's the phoenix. It comes back around. It burns down to ashes, and it is reborn. So it is a very natural cycle. It is a very natural cycle. And I think that, you know, it's displayed for us over and over again. So for those that may feel hopelessness of this is it, you know, I think that the very nature of things shows us over and over again that that isn't so, that there is a rebirth of some sort again.
And, you know, I think it's also important, too, to maybe reframe our end-of-life conversations and realize that, number one, we can't sit in grief our entire rest of our life, because then that will have taken over the power of our life and we've lost that which we came here to do, is enjoy life. And also, too, you know, I've had end-of-life clients where they would have a tremendous party. They could be at hospice in their house, you know, and at 3 or 4 in the morning, when it seems like that's time that they're going to be passing, you know, they bring out the birthday cake and the noisemakers and the party things, and they just enjoy that moment of passing, and they celebrate that person. I think it's all about learning to celebrate a person instead of always looking at all of that you're lost. Your loss can be transient, but then celebrate it on the other side, and it really will transform your beliefs.
Yeah, it really, I think you're right. You know, I do something kind of, I think on a smaller scale like that with my kids. I have three little kids, and, well, one's not so little. He's going to be a teenager in a few weeks. But every year since they were born, I get so sad on the eve of their birthday, and it just has kind of naturally happened, and I watched it and observed it, and I hug them really tight, like, you know, oh, you know, I'm saying goodbye to my 4-year-old Ariana, and I hold her and I clutch her and I cry a little bit and I love her. And, cause you know, they'll never be like that again. And then the next morning there's my 5-year-old Ariana, and it's like, yay, you're 5. Hello, 5-year-old Ariana, you know, and I hug her and love her and, you know, but I think that it kind of, you know, they watched this ritual the whole time, you know, and they, I think it kind of is, I know it's a powerful ritual for our family, because, you know, it acknowledges the letting go of something that we're not going to have again, and it acknowledges the welcoming of something that is new and that we're going to get to know.
Absolutely. So it just, it prepares you for the process. You know, you're able to, it just makes it easier when you're able to go through these passages all through your life instead of sheltering them all off. You know, sometimes people shelter so much off that they end up being very bitter people. And what they're really bitter about is about not having lived the life, because they really felt like they were bound by something, you know, rules, restrictions, grief, loss, whatever that might be. But really, it's up to us every day to stand up and say, you know, am I going to choose how to live my day today, or will it choose me? And, you know, so we can just go through and take those short steps and look, there's a lot of days where it can choose me, you know, have at it. But then I'll get real tired of that process, and I'll say, you know what, I'm choosing today. And then that's a day when you can stand up for it. So, you know, I think, Tiffany, it was a great book, and I think it's really something for almost any decade of, you know, anyone would be just love to have this book.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you so much for this time with you. It is just a pleasure. I think I could talk to you forever.
But we have come to the end of the show, so, but we will probably have you back on. You know, we'll have to be watching for your next great work, right?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Can you share with us, Tiffany, your website and how people could find out more information about you? That would be great.
Sure. My website is myyellowballoon.com, and you can also find me on Facebook at Tiffany Papa George, and it's P-A-P-A George, all one word. And you can also find me on Twitter at Tiffany Papa G, as in George, Tiffany Papa G. And I would love to hear from you.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I think it was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Tiffany Papa George, her book is My Yellow Balloon. Yes, it is a children's book, but I will tell you, all you need to do is get one book into the house, maybe at holiday time or something, even a birthday, or if you need it at a time when really grief is really deep in the house, and you will find that everybody will be able to relate to it. And it's really about paying attention to read this book. It's not just something you sit down and you memorize, and it's like, you know, people, the kids, they watch on TV and they've got all those commercials down and they just spit them out, you know. This is a book about touching and feeling and paying attention. It has, as Tiffany had said, the book has depth that you can touch it, you can feel it. It's in print. It's not on the internet. It has depth to the cover. It has wonderful colors inside. The pictures are absolutely fabulous. You know, they even fold out. So there's a whole lot of experiences you can have just by passing through this book. So please do check it out. Again, the book is called My Yellow Balloon, and Tiffany's information is on the bottom of today's show page. Just click on there and you go directly to her page. So thank you so much for joining us today here on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio. It was a pleasure to be with you this Health Blast 2015, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeannettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeannette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone, or the television remote, or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.